Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to another episode of Kotaku Split Screen, the only podcast that's nominated for Best Action Game and Best Action Adventure Game. First on today's schedule, we're talking news on Mega Man 11, Destiny 2's Curse of Osiris Disasters, and Xenoblade 2 reviews. Then, Kirk and I play a little game called Guess the Game Awards Nominees, where we try to figure out who's nominated for each game award category. We close things off with some talk on Skyrim Switch, which is an excellent port, and the state of Destiny 2, which is, let's say, complicated. All right, let's go. We are back for another episode. My name is Jason Schreier, the news editor at Kotaku.com. I am joined by Kirk Hamilton, editor-at-large of Kotaku.com. Hello, Kirk.
Hello, Jason. How are you today?
I am good. It is December. We are heading full steam towards the end of the year. This holiday season, all of the big video games have come out, and I am going to Vegas this weekend.
Man, you've got a lot going on. I'm coming to New York next week, so I've got travel coming up as well. December, it goes faster and faster. I feel like the older I get and the more I do year in review stuff for my job, the more I feel like December is just a blur. I feel like I'm already writing stuff 2 weeks out. I already know everything I'm doing for work for the next 3 weeks. I'm doing so much travel. It just feels like it's going to be 2018 tomorrow, basically.
It will. It will be 2018 tomorrow. I hope you're ready for it.
I guess. I don't know. I haven't been ready for anything for some time. What are you doing in Vegas?
It is my bachelor party.
That's very exciting.
Which is a little bit crazy. It is. It's going to be. I'm not a strip club and nightclub type of person. Mm. But I wanted to go to Vegas because I very much am a gambling type of person. So I'm going with a group of folks, and it should be fun. We'll see. You'll see how I look next week if I just am a wreck.
I think it'll be fun, yeah, to see you come into the office, I guess, on Tuesday and see how you're looking. And this is, I have never been to Vegas, and I thought about coming with you to this. And
you've never been to Vegas?
Not really. I went one time, and it was for the Valve Steam Machines reveal during CES, and I think I flew in and then flew out the same day. I don't even think I stayed overnight. But I've never done the Vegas thing, and it's kind of too bad that I am not going with you because I feel like too...
Well, it's not too late if you want to come.
I know. It's too much travel. It's already too much travel. But it does feel like if I were going to experience the Vegas gambling thing, I should definitely do it with Jason Schreier. So I'm a little bummed I won't be there. I hope you guys have fun.
Yeah, I mean, there's still plenty of weekends ahead of us.
That's true.
You're not like dying next year. Go to Vegas. Exactly. We can just decide to go to Vegas just randomly. But yeah, gambling in Vegas is pretty fun. It's walking down the strip. I'll talk about this more next week once I can talk about the experiences I'm actually going to have. But just walking down the strip and people watching is quite the experience. A lot of, shall we say, interesting people hit Las Vegas. It's quite the place. The vibe of it is so insane. It's just so unlike anything else.
Yeah, my main memory was I was in a casino for 5 minutes and it was just covered in cigarette smoke.
That's a big thing.
I remember thinking, I don't want to be here anymore. Mm-hmm. So that was not pleasant.
So before we get to the news, what else have you been up to?
Well, I've been watching a TV show that I would imagine a lot of our listeners have been listening to or have been watching for a long time that I just started watching recently, called The Great British Bake Off or The Great British Baking Show. And I just want to very briefly mention that this might be the perfect television show. Again, I think anyone who's been watching this show a lot will think that this is the most no-duh thing I could possibly say. This show is wonderful, though, and I don't know. It's a very stressful time in America. It is.
So what is the show? Tell me.
There's a lot of bad stuff. Well, I will. There's a lot of bad stuff on TV. It's kind of constantly this onslaught of bad news. This show is a wonderful, just relaxing, soothing thing to watch in these trying times. So what it is it's a baking reality show. I feel like there's 1,000 of these shows on TV. I think a lot of them are actually mimicking the Great British Bake Off, which is called the Great British Baking Show in America. They changed the name for some reason. I don't know. But I'll call it the Great British Bake Off because I'm legit, and I call it by its original name.
I'm trying
name.
To think of why they would change that name. Is Bake Off copyrighted?
I don't know. Yeah, there must be some weird reason because I think it's a better name than the Great British Baking Show. Is like Bake Off. It's a competition, and it should sound like a competition. So
Bake Off.
The way it works is 12, or I think we're in the second season now. There are 4 seasons on Netflix. There's a bunch of spinoffs. The people, the two hosts or the two judges, Mary Berry and Paul Hollywood, are apparently, they're like the Simon Cowell, Paul Abdul. I mean, they're like that level of fame in Britain. Mm-hmm. Paul Hollywood is a constant tabloid sensation. Apparently there's been drama revolving around this show, and people split off and did separate shows. I didn't know any of this. And then every time I Google stuff, I find these amazing stories about them. But basically it's one of those creative type competitive reality shows like Project Runway, maybe, where each week there's a series of challenges. The people just have to bake stuff. And, everybody's very, very positive. The show kind of gets by.
So when
on
you
this.
Say stuff, it's cakes, cookies.
Yeah, there's a
whatever,
theme each
anything?
Week. So yeah, biscuits. You learn a lot about a lot of things. I actually didn't know what a baked Alaska was. I thought a baked Alaska, like I knew it was that asshole dude on Twitter, and that
was
all
Nazi.
I knew. And it was food. I knew it was some sort of dish, but I thought it was a crab thing or something. But it turns out it's this really elaborate ice cream dessert that looks amazing. So you get to watch people. You know, there's a new challenge each week. They kind of just do 3 rounds. They make these really elaborate things, but then sometimes they just have to make a really basic recipe in an extremely limited amount of time. And it's a great show. It's great because it's so positive. Everybody's very funny and just polite and very British, which is just nice to watch. Like I was saying, everything feels stressful right now, but it's nice to watch people be so nice. But I also like it in the way, for the reason that I like a lot of competitive reality shows. I actually always really liked Project Runway, which is the fashion design show that Heidi Klum would host. I don't know if it's still on. I stopped watching forever ago, but I watched a few seasons, and that show is always fun for the same reason, because you get to watch very, very talented people make things every week. They you know, the best contestants always make this incredible shit. And, you know, on Project Runway, it would be some incredible dress that they would build out of grass or something. And on Great British Bake Off, it's just some unbelievable looking, beautiful dessert that makes you really, really want to eat it. And I think I like those shows better than, you know, obviously regular reality shows where it's just people sitting around being jerks to one another. Or even something like American Idol, where they're doing covers of songs you already know. Like, that's kind of cool, but it's not as cool as watching people create things.
Creative.
Yeah, yeah, creating
so
under
here's
pressure.
My thing. So when I watch Food Network, mm-hmm. I always turn off baking shows because baking cakes that are just decorative doesn't interest me at all,
well,
as opposed
to
cooking things that are useful and practical for my life.
So there's
which I feel like
I don't like shows like Ace of Cakes, is that one where they make those showpiece cakes that taste like cardboard. I think that's nonsense. A really cool thing about Great British Baking Show or Great British Bake Off is that it's all about the food. In the end, it's about how well you've baked it and how good it tastes. And the judges are really interesting the way they talk about, you know, how it tastes. It's more like Iron Chef in that regard, where you still aren't getting the experience because you see how it looks, but you obviously can't taste it. But the judges are very good at articulating what they like and what they don't like and how the flavors work. And there, each season, at least, there's been at least one contestant who's the showy contestant who makes the really amazing looking things, but then that don't taste that good. And the judges always knock them for that. So that's kind of, it's definitely about making really good stuff. There are people who make the simplest thing and it's just delicious and has some, you know, experimental ingredient that really works. And those people always get rewarded. So it'll make you want to bake. I mean, it makes me want to bake everything that I see on it.
So we have a lot to get to, but just real quick, speaking of TV, I've been rewatching Lost this past weekend on a whim. Uh-huh. I just decided to start rewatching.
I think it's because you're playing Skyrim again. Doesn't it make
just
you just want to feel like you're traveling back in time?
Well, Skyrim was 2011 and Lost ended in 2010, so not quite an intersection. But so I used to be obsessed with Lost back in the day. I think you were also. A lot of people were.
Yeah, I watched and then stopped and then started again.
Okay, so I was obsessed. I was like, tune in every week, talk about it with all my friends, have get-together parties every week. And I was crushed by the last season and how bad it was. But rewatching it after all this time just makes me remember how good the first season was.
The first season
of that show is just incredible television. Mm-hmm. Even today, it holds up as like some of the best TV I've ever seen. So if you have not watched that, or if you are feeling a rewatch, you should, because it's on Netflix. And
two thoughts on that. First of all, I rewatched the pilot alone, I think, or maybe the first few episodes a few years ago. And I remember thinking, Jesus, this is a good pilot. I mean, that is a good pilot.
So good.
Second, something you should really read if you haven't, and that listeners who like Lost should really read, is the TV critic Alan Sepinwall has a book called The Revolution Was Televised, and there's a chapter in that book about Lost that is amazing. His book actually really reminds me of your book, Blood, Sweat, and Pixels. Very, very similar. There's one chapter for each TV show, and it covers, I'm trying to remember all of them, but you know, it's sort of the prestige TV
revolution shows.
So The Sopranos, Breaking Bad, Oz is in there, and there's a chapter on Lost, and it was a lot like video game development, actually. I think, have you read that chapter? Or no, you haven't, right?
No, I would like
you to. You should. It's so funny because it has so many similarities where they had no idea what they were making for so long after the show was a hit. And it transferred, I don't remember all the particulars, but it transferred creative control.
It was like a service game.
It was sort of, yeah. And it transferred creative control multiple times while it was in gestation, you know, while they were still working on it. And it was originally going to be something very different. And then the Lindelof and Weiss, or wait, is that? No, Benioff and Weiss, Lindelof, and I'm getting my Game of Thrones guys mixed up with my Lost guys. The two showrunners.
Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cruse.
Carlton Cuse, that's right.
Cuse.
Those two guys sort of wound up with it, and then it was a way bigger hit. I think everyone was expecting that it would be kind of a niche show, and then suddenly it was this monster hit, and they didn't know what they were doing. And he has these great interviews with them about that process, so I highly recommend people read that.
So yeah, so that holds up. First season holds up. I'm looking forward to getting into the worst stuff and being like, oh man,
season two. So yeah, they lost me, I think, after season two. There was that Jack's Tattoos episode.
That was three. Season two was pretty good too.
Season two,
is when things went downhill.
That was where they lost me, right.
So basically, the arc was like, one and two were really good. Two was Mr. Echo and the Hatch.
Two was the seams we're showing in two, if I recall correctly.
A little bit, but the finale of two, from what I remember, is one of the best episodes they've done. That was the first Desmond episode, and they show his past. Then three was very much rocky, up and down, had a lot of bad.
That was where they lost me.
Yeah, and then three ended with, I won't spoil it in case people haven't seen it and want to watch but that ended with Bearded Jack.
That was that revelation.
Yes.
So I came back for the next season, season four, I believe.
Four.
And it was
that
when
was
I had seen
season.
People talking about it. And it was the episode, The Constant, which is one of the best episodes
all-timer.
Of TV ever. And I remember watching that and thinking, holy shit, if everything else on this show is trash, that episode like made the whole thing worth it. That was so good. And then I don't have the intense hatred of the ending, because I think by skipping a season, I sort of was detached from the show. And I don't think I ever watched it as intensely as you did, but I didn't.
You should rewatch it. We should do a rewatch Lost podcast.
That's not a bad idea. Right. Oh man. We need another podcast to do. That would be pretty fun though, actually.
And then also real quick, I just watched a screening of The Disaster Artist, which we should talk about once you've seen it, because that's a really good movie.
With
about the making of The Room.
Kotaku split screen guest, based on the book co-written by Kotaku split screen guest Tom Bissell.
Yes, friend of the show, Tom. That was pretty cool.
Nice.
Anyway, we have a lot to get to. We're going to get into some Game Awards nominations, which will be a lot of fun. But first, let's get to the news. All right. So, news item number one. On Monday, Capcom held a stream for Mega Man's 30th anniversary. And because it is Capcom, everyone expected the worst. They expected maybe like a mobile game or a pachinko or whatever. But instead, Capcom announced a Mega Man X collection, or maybe not a collection. They've been kind of weird about saying what it is. But basically, they're re-releasing the Mega Man X games. And
the Mega Man X Mega games. Man, is that like the X games, but with Mega Man competing in all the X games activities?
Yeah, it's Mega Man snowboarding and jumping over people. And then Mega Man 11 which it kind of looks like Mega Mighty Number 9, except good in terms of the art style. And I am very impressed. I'm excited to play that because I've always loved the Mega Man games. So I'm very excited for that one.
I'm not that excited. I mean, I've never really gotten into Mega Man or liked Mega Man. I like Mega Man music, but I've never fully understood the Mega Man thing. I think I see people really get worked up and excited. Can you explain to me, maybe very just briefly, what is the thing that makes Mega Man so cool? Like, what is it about those games that is good?
Well, first of all, which ones have you played?
I don't know. I've played little bits of the NES ones, maybe 1 and 2. That's kind of it.
Yeah, so it's changed a lot over the years. I mean, first of all, the core of it, the thing that's always been really cool and remains really cool is the idea that the structure of it, that you go and defeat these bosses and then you take their powers and then you can use those powers for the rest of the game. So every traditional Mega Man game starts off with a grid of like a 3x3 grid and Mega Man's face is in the middle and then they're 8 bosses surrounding him, and you can choose to do them in any order.
Okay.
And whichever one you go through one, you beat the boss, and then you get their powers.
Was there a Game Boy Mega Man? Maybe that was the one that I played.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, and so you can go in any order. Okay, that does ring a bell.
Yeah, so, and then each boss is weak to one of the other powers, but you don't know which one, so you have to kind of figure it out, or guess, or look it up in a guide. And so the appeal of those games was always that they were just really smartly designed, the platforming was really cool, they were really tough. So if you're a kid and you just need a game to occupy your time, you just keep trying over and over again on these levels. The levels are really, none of them are super long, so it doesn't really feel like the game is punishing you too much when you die and you have to restart your progress, because you feel like you're getting better and better at the game every time. And they're just designed really well. The combination of they look cool, they sounded cool. And then what happened on the Super Nintendo was Capcom came out with Mega Man X, which was this revolutionary game that still holds up really well today. I would say holds up much better than the NES games. And it added a dash for a Mega Man and a slide and all these other abilities. Mm. And that whole series has some really good games in it. Mega Man X, the first 3 games basically are the best ones.
Is Mega Man X on the SNES Classic?
Yes.
That's what I thought. Maybe I'll play that. Maybe I'll give that one a shot and report back. I am curious, and I know, I mean, I believe that it's good only because everybody says they like it. I wasn't super into the art style, and that's only because I played some of Mighty No. 9, and it really does kind of look like it, and I was surprised by that.
Better version of that.
There are so many directions you can go. I don't know why they went with that sort of gauze on the lens, pastel, shiny look. But then again, I saw the screenshots and immediately just kind of thought, ew. But then I watched the trailer, and the gameplay looks good. It looks like an interesting, pretty cool game. So I get it. Maybe I'll go play Mega Man X, and we'll see how that goes.
Or you could just wait for it to come to Switch.
I have this SNES Classic sitting here that I literally have not played.
Yeah, so you just never use it, huh?
It's just sitting on my desk. It's a desk accessory at this point.
I'm surprised that you haven't wanted to go back to Super Mario RPG after
It's not that I haven't wanted to. It's just there's been so much else to do. I do want to use it. But that actually, I mean, Super Mario RPG, I feel like I have a sense of now. I don't really have a sense of Mega Man X. So maybe that'll be the one I go dig into.
That's a good one. It's easy to just play for 45 minutes and then you know it. Mm-hmm. Like, beat a couple of the bosses. Start with Chill Penguin. Chill Penguin is the easiest level.
It's also called Chill Penguin, so why wouldn't I start
with
Chill
Penguin?
The names
are all great. The names are all fantastic.
That's good.
There's some ridiculous ones. Like, I'm racking my brain. Boomerang Chameleon, I think, is one of them.
Mm.
But yeah, they're all like Mega Man X.
I would go
they're
see a band called. Animals. There's got to be a band called Chill Penguin. Is that maybe that's in Scott Pilgrim or something? There would be a band called Chill Penguin.
Probably, but it would probably be based on Mega Man at this point.
You don't know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So Mega Man 11, I'm very excited for that. I will play the hell out of that game, especially since it's coming to Switch. All right. News item number 2. Destiny 2, Curse of Osiris, comes out and fucks everything up. First there was the gun disaster, Prometheus Lens, which is apparently this buggy laser beam. Then
I'm
going to
tell you about that in a second.
The crucible.
First, let's go ahead and list the things.
Okay, so you go into PvP with that, and it just breaks everything because it destroys people in like less than a second. And Deej from Bungie has come out and said that it's bugged. And then people discovered that if they didn't buy the DLC, they would be locked out of some of the endgame content, such as the prestige raids and the prestige nightfalls. So if you don't pay $20, you are essentially lost this stuff. And it's especially worst of all if you bought the game on PC, which was only like a month and a half ago, less
less than a month and a half ago, and you find yourself gated out of some content unless you get the Curse of Osiris expansion pack.
Yeah.
And yeah, people are generally disappointed by this thing. I would say the vibe is really, really negative because the campaign was really short. It kind of fizzled. It felt like it didn't really go anywhere. It set up this big bad Vex who was supposed to be like this apocalyptic creature and then never really explained why he was any different than just another Vex.
Yeah, so I mean, I want to, we're going to talk about the expansion in depth a little later, right? We'll have
okay,
that in
yeah,
our,
let's do
in
that.
Our game
so
section.
I'll save so, that. So let's yeah. just talk about the gun.
I just want to talk
stuff.
About these two news items. First of all, I need to talk about this gun. This is the funniest shit I've seen in a game in a while. The what's it called again? The Prometheus lens. Prometheus lens. So this thing is a trace rifle, which is just like Cold Heart, which was the pre-order
thing. Yeah, this
thing.
Is a solar version of
the
Cold Heart.
It's the solar version of Cold Heart. It's basically a reskin. It looks just like it. It shoots a continuous beam. I've been playing PvP all morning because I saw this last night. I think someone had posted it on Reddit or something saying this gun melts, and I was looking at the thread under it, and the comments were not along the lines of, oh, this is a new good gun. They were along the lines of, this thing is broken and this is ridiculous. But I didn't actually watch the videos, and I saw you posted it in the morning. And then I get on, and at this point, enough people have it that every game I've played, there have been multiple of this gun, and it is amazing. It's the funniest shit ever. It completely breaks the game. Like, Destiny PvP is just broken right now because you'll be running around shooting someone and then you'll just die because someone, and the it's the nature of the gun that makes it so funny too. It looks kind of like a laser pointer and they'll kill you from across the map. I mean, from scout rifle range or from shotgun range, it just does not matter. You're dead.
It's
you
so
cannot.
Funny. It's so
you,
funny. How did this happen?
I don't know. And it's, I don't know what the bug is too. The thing can go around walls or around corners. A couple times people just kind of laser it at the other team and it just kills all of them. It's like a delete button. And it is the funniest shit. I was making GIFs. I was just capping footage because I was playing and every death to this thing was hilarious because I feel like this is almost an intentional troll. I know that it must be a mistake, but it really feels as though if you were going to ultimately troll Destiny players, if you were at Bungie and you wanted to just really fuck with people, what you would do is exactly this. You'd say, okay, we're going to release Destiny 2. PvP is going to be totally overhauled, so there's a way higher time to kill. Everyone's going to get really used to it. So you get used to it now in the game. You come around, someone's there. You kind of have a gunfight. You have time to maneuver. You can take a couple shots. You know, it's not this instant kill thing. And then we're going to introduce a gun in the first expansion that blows all of that out of the water and kills you in like a second. And so that it just is, it's just amazing. I sort of love it almost. And I feel like this might have been what it felt like when the Vex Mythoclast first entered the Crucible in Destiny 1.
No, I don't think so. I remember that. And I don't think it was.
No, it wasn't. Bad. Definitely not. There's no way because this is so obviously broken. It's just so out of step with the rest of the game. But I do think.
I think Vex was more like Thorn, where it was just dominating everything.
Yeah, I think it was a little worse than that. I think it was borderline broken. And it's a bummer because I don't know, because you and I both got into Crucible kind of a little bit after that, after they had already nerfed it. But I think there was a time where people would say you would hear that like chugging electric sound that the Mythoclast would make and just know that you were going to die. And this is like that. You hear, you just hear the thing fire up and you just think, well, I'm fucked. I'm definitely not going to win this. And it's super funny, and it just makes me think that it's one more way that Destiny 2 is exactly like Destiny 1, year one,
yep.
Even though it's, of course, so different. We'll talk about that more
no,
later.
No, it's just the battle between the players and the developers continues.
And there's even a laser gun that's ridiculously overpowered in Crucible in the fall. It's very
funny. The parallels are great. Do you have any thoughts before we get to the next news item? Do you have any thoughts on the lockout for non-DLC
I think it's a
fuck-up.
I think it's a real fuck-up. I actually didn't realize the extent of it until you wrote it up. I'd seen people talking about it, but I've just been playing the game because it came out yesterday, and the fact that it's a power level lock that you just can't get into, like, you know, power level 330 events if you don't have the expansion just strikes me as a fuck up. I mean, that just shouldn't be the case. I don't know. There should be
well,
two
it's
versions
not just,
or something.
It says, like, if you try to click that, it says that requires Destiny 2 Curse of Osiris.
Yeah, I mean, that's shitty. That just is not, especially, like you said, this shortly after the game came out.
Right.
I mean, either just charge whatever, $100 and you get the whole game, or it just does not work. That doesn't work if that's how this is going to work.
Yeah,
I just think
really,
that seems like a mistake.
It calls back to our conversation from the other day about video game pricing and how Destiny 2 is not a $60 game. It's essentially, it's a season pass is what, $35? So it's like a $95 game.
Yeah, and if they want to charge $95 for this game, that's their right. I mean, a year's worth of this game, which I like.
But nobody would buy it at that point.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe they would. I like this game. I think it's fun. And if you just get, I mean, in this market, it would be a lot harder.
The number of people who would buy it at $95 is way lower than the number of people who would buy it at $60 plus the season pass.
Right. Which is just weird. It's another sign of this weird spot that we're in right now, where it just doesn't, this doesn't work. This does not make sense. It does not make sense to basically sell a game for that much, but then also sell a broken version of it or a hobbled version of it for cheaper, but then not tell people that and message it all wrong. That just, I don't think that's in anyone's best interest, even if it is a short-term way to make money. So,
But again, it's very Destiny.
It is, because they, like you pointed out in your article about it, they did the same thing with The Dark Below, where you couldn't get to certain strikes because they were, you know, they would come up as the weekly rotation, and then if you didn't have the expansion, you couldn't play them. So yeah, this, it's on brand at least, but it's a mess. I don't know. I hope they do something about it, but maybe they won't.
So news item number three. This isn't really news, but it's something it's I want to bring up, so I included in the news. So last week I wrote a review of Xenoblade 2, which I really did not like, and it was very negative. And I was absolutely hounded for it. Video game fans on the internet went after me. A lot of nasty comments, a lot of Gamergate threads, a lot of the typical stuff. And it got me thinking. I was thinking about how there's, for years now, there's been a lot of talk about the way video game publishers pressure reviewers, and how starting way back with the Jeff Gerstmann, Kane and Lynch incident, and how he left GameSpot over them wanting to change a review score from negative to more positive, how people have always thought that like video game publishers influence reviewers. And that is true to a certain extent. There is some influence that video game publishers and PR people try to put on reviewers. But the biggest influence, the biggest pressure comes from fans, because reviewers know that if they give the new Xenoblade a negative review, if they give Uncharted 4 an 8 out of 10 instead of a 9 out of 10, fans will absolutely go after them. Fans will go ballistic. They'll get hate messages. They'll get death threats. They'll get Photoshops. They'll get nasty comments. It'll just hang over them. And I think that is a lot more real and a lot more threatening than anything that video game publishers do, which is kind of a weird and terrifying phenomenon, and one that's exclusive to the video game industry, I think.
No, that's not exclusive to the video game industry. Yeah, movies, man. You remember Ghostbusters? Do you remember the Marvel movies when people would say that Batman v Superman was bad?
But people aren't going after reviewers of movies.
Oh, they definitely are. You follow movie reviewers on Twitter. Have you never? I mean,
people were going after Ghostbuster reviewers?
Absolutely. Or Batman reviewers, people who would say Justice League was bad or Suicide Squad. There were huge debacles over people who reviewed those games. It's a lot of the same people. I mean, there's a big overlap between people who are going to get angry at a movie reviewer for saying Suicide Squad is bad and people who are going to get angry at a reviewer for saying Xenoblade 2 is bad. That's not unique to video games, but it's still a thing. I mean, it's a thing across the spectrum for a lot of people who write reviews of things.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm 100% with you. I mean, I guess I'm not as familiar with that world.
It's different in its own way, but there's no reason.
Well, I think it's accepted that. I think it's accepted that Justice League is a bad movie, that Suicide Squad is a bad movie.
No way. There are people who still argue to this day that Batman v Superman is good, and there's huge arguments.
Okay, but I'm not talking about niche communities. I'm talking about the world at large.
That's not a niche community. I feel like this is a digression. I definitely think that there are similarities.
So fine.
But whatever.
So forget that argument. Putting that argument aside. Another big thing about this is that it was like mostly positive reviews of Xenoblade 2, and then I came out with this really negative one. And I think that in video game reviewing, you have a tendency for reviewers to skew very positive, and for when there's a negative review of a much anticipated game, that tends to be an exception rather than like an overall taste or an overall sense of it. I think it's a lot more rare in video game reviewing for there to be these anomalies in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, there's still those anomalies where everybody likes a Marvel movie and the one reviewer who didn't like it, they come after them. But again, that's beside the point. I think there are some interesting things here. Just speaking about this in particular and this instance, and then just the way that it plays out with game reviews that are interesting, whether or not they're unique to games. One is that I think this happens a lot when a game isn't out yet. when it was the day before, if I recall the timeline correctly, the day before Xenoblade 2 came out. Basically, we talked about it on the podcast. Then that Thursday, the show went up and you were, you know,
and I tweeted about it
that day. So that was kind of, you were warming people up for the fact that you were going to give this game a negative review. And that on its own, I think, is a way to prime people to be very angry in particular. Because you're not just saying, here's a review of a game, I didn't like it. You're saying, I don't like this game and I'm reviewing it, so get ready for that. This is act one of me hating this game. I'm going to hate this game over multiple phases for you to deal with. So there was that. There was the thing
Phase
you said.
Phase one of the Xenoblade universe.
Of your Xenoblade scheme. There's also the fact that, like you said, you're kind of an outlier. Based on your review, which I edited and talked to you about last week on the show, I'm surprised at how positive the reviews are of this game, especially because I feel like, and I watched Tim Rogers' absolutely exceptional video that everybody should go watch that he made about it. And between your review and his video, it seemed very clear what kind of a game this was. And I was actually surprised to see.
I just don't know. Yeah, I don't really get it either. I think there, and actually hilariously, I was like looking through Reddit and Rossetti era and various places, Twitter and stuff. And over the weekend, I saw a lot of people being like, wait a minute, this game is a mess. Like this game
Why
is
didn't somebody
full
tell
of
us?
Systems that don't explain. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think a large part of it is that when you're reviewing a video game, especially a massive RPG, you have to spend so many hours playing it that part of you has to convince yourself that it's good, or else you feel like you're wasting your life. Yeah. Seriously, this is something that I've thought about it a lot. I played 50 hours of this game and I was able to just step back and be like, wow, this was not a good game. But as I was playing it, I was like, I have to get through this. So I had to find things to like. Otherwise, like, you can't just sit there and passively absorb it. You have to actively play it. So I think that people who spent 80, 100 hours playing this game probably convinced themselves that it was a lot better than it was. I think the same exact thing happened with Dragon Age 2. If you go back and look at some of those reviews, I believe it was PC Gamer who said it was the best RPG of the decade and gave it a 10 out of 10. And there were just so many glowing reviews until a little while afterwards when people started coming out and being like, wait a minute, this game sucks.
Or the day that it came out in Kirk Hamilton's Little Red review at Paste when I was still not writing for Kotaku, and I absolutely eviscerated
that
game.
That's true, and you nailed it. Yeah, I reviewed it for Wired, and also just like eviscerated it. Although I didn't get a review copy until the day it came out, from what I remember. So my review ran late. But anyway, but yeah, there were all these positive reviews, and I think that that's something that happens a lot with RPGs, especially. I think it's hard to write a negative review of an RPG that you spent dozens of hours in because you kind of convince yourself that it's good because you want that time investment to mean something.
Hmm. That makes sense. I think there's also just an anger that comes when the more niche the type of game is. And I think in this case, the fact that Xenoblade 2 has also got big titty fan service anime
stuff
in
it. That's a big part of it. That was the Gamergate connection.
It brings in the crew of people who tend to get pretty worked up about that stuff fairly or, you know, largely unfairly. So that, I think, also contributed in this case to that. You know, if it's similar actually to when there's a console exclusive. If you give a game like The Order 1886 a negative review, or if you're the one person who said Horizon Zero Dawn is bad, you're going to get way more heat than if you just say that you didn't like Call of Duty World War II or something. Because that's just, it's there, any of the games with the sort of embedded fandom that really want to stand up for it, that then they say, oh, this guy is the outlier, we're going after him. And then you get what happened.
The funniest comments that I got were people tweeting at me or sending me nasty messages being like, why do you hate Japanese games? Go, like, you clearly just don't like JRPGs.
Yeah, what's your problem with JRPGs, Jason? Jeez. You should really play Suikoden 2 if you don't like JRPGs, Jason. You'll like it. It's so good. You really need to play it already.
It's so funny. It's so funny when people are like, oh, you just don't like Japanese games. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Xenoblade 2 is bad. I really do not recommend it to anyone. I just can't. The more I think about it, the more that game is just, I just think about how poorly designed it is and how clunky and how bad the writing is. And I just do not recommend it. All right. So let's take a quick break and then we will talk about some video game awards.
All right.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hey, I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And we're the hosts of Lifehacker's podcast, The Upgrade. On The Upgrade, we help you improve your life 1 week at a time. We talk to guests like former hacker Hector Monsegur about online security.
You need to be aware of how you could be attacked. You need to be aware of what's your weakness.
And Alan Alda on how to communicate more effectively.
And in order to achieve that, we start with teaching exercises derived from improvisation.
And sex therapist Steven Snyder about how to have great sex in a long-term relationship.
What really works under those circumstances is if you enjoy the other person selfishly.
Hey, your life? It's terrible. We can help.
Find The Upgrade wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Kirk.
Oh, man. Okay.
Are you ready?
No, but, you know, whatever.
Okay, so we're going to play a game right now, and it is called Guess the Game Awards Nominees. I was looking back, and I don't remember if we've actually done this before, but or if we just talked about it in the past. But basically, here's how it's going to work. We are going to go through not all of the categories, but about a dozen of the categories in the Video Game Awards, which are Thursday night, and which we talked about with Jeff Keighley last week on episode 107, which you can find on the iTunes or whatever, the whatever feed you use. And you and I are going to switch off, and one of us is going to guess all of the nominees, just based on the category, and we're going to see if we can piece them all together without having looked at them. Neither of us have looked at them, except you saw the Game of the Year Award nominees, so I'll just do that one.
Correct.
So let's get right to it, and you're going to start off with the best independent game of the year. So you're going to have to guess the five entries.
It's five? Five for each one?
Five entries.
Okay. Oh, man. All right. Let's think. Well, one is going to be Pyre. We're going to put Pyre down. Did I get that right? Are you looking at them?
Yes.
Okay. Let's think. I don't know if I can get to five. I feel like I definitely
tell
can
me.
Think
just
of,
tell me if you need hints.
Yeah. Okay. You can give me hints.
So
let's think. Well, so what's weird is a game like Divinity: Original Sin 2. That's an independent game, but I have a feeling that that's not on there.
Yeah, so I guess that's not considered. So one of them has been in like Xbox. One of them is essentially published by Xbox because it's been promoted by Xbox.
Oh, Cuphead, of course.
Yeah,
Cuphead is of course.
The Pyre Cuphead. One of them is something we've discussed for our own Game of the Year. A game that a lot of people loved, has kind of an interesting art style, talking animals and stuff.
Night in the Woods.
Yes.
I still haven't played that. Man, I'm doing my marathon getting through all of my games at the end of the year. And that's
two more.
I've been playing Pyre for that.
Can you figure out two more?
Oh boy, I don't know. Let's see.
One of them is like a mid-tier game. It's not really an indie game.
Oh, Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice? Yes. Yeah, I guess that'll be on there.
And then the other one is also kind of a mid-tier game.
But it's not PUBG. Even though, wasn't PUBG an indie game? I guess it's published by some company and now it's definitely.
Well, that's
no
the thing about
indie.
These categories is usually these categories are just meant to like give a shout out to games that won't win Game of the Year, even though maybe they should. So something like PUBG should win Best Independent Game, but they want to give that award to something else, so they're not going to include that in there.
Right. That makes sense. Oh.
I believe you reviewed.
Yeah. What Remains of Edith Finch?
Yes. Got it.
Okay.
All right. Next up,
you're guessing Best Family Game. Okay. Yes. Wow, that's good. Let me scroll down to these. Best. What does that mean? Best Family Game. Okay, I don't know.
You're gonna have to tell me.
What?
I'm just gonna guess.
What in the world? Oh,
are they weird?
Yeah, they're weird. Okay, good
Part
luck.
Part of the fun is this is how strange the awards are in general. Like how strange
the family games. Okay.
Super Mario Odyssey.
Yeah, that's one. Good.
Really?
Yeah.
Mario Kart.
Yeah, that's another one. Wow, I would never have guessed that because that didn't even really come out this year. But yes, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is one of the nominees.
I'm just thinking Switch games. Like 1-2 Switch, is that one?
No.
Or like ARMS or like Splatoon 2.
That's one, Splatoon 2.
Oh, really? So yeah. Three of them are just Switch Nintendo
Keep
games?
Going.
Mario and Rabbids.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's four? Are there five? There are five?
Yeah, the fifth one is Unbelievable. Is what
Unbelievable?
I'll say.
Is it also a Switch game?
I believe that it is, and it...
Jackbox Party Pack?
No, it also stars... It's another... Just I feel like this nominee should have been called Colorful Cartoony Games. This is a colorful cartoony game that is
Cuphead?
Apparently not good, I don't think. It's on
not
Switch.
Not good.
No.
A not good cartoony game
So
on
you said
Switch.
A bunch of Mario games.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the other 90s platformer mascot that could maybe be included in that?
Kirby? Mario Party?
No,
Kirby?
The competing platformer.
Oh,
mascot.
Sonic? Sonic Mania?
Yes, Sonic Mania is the other nominee.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, weird. What am I guessing?
So you're up to Best Strategy Game, okay.
Oh, okay. Total War Warhammer 2?
Yes.
The XCOM expansion? Does that
yes.
count? Okay, good. That
War of the
count.
Chosen.
Mario plus Rabbids.
Yes.
Three. Nice. Doing pretty good on this one. What now I'm out. I'm totally out. Does the Civ expansion count? Did Civ get an expansion? They didn't, did they?
No, that was just announced, but that's for next
okay,
year.
Okay, but that's not out yet. I just figured I'd guess.
Okay, so one of them is a big budget game by a major publisher. It is a sequel to a game that was kind of out of nowhere.
Did the
really
original
weird.
Sin too?
No, that's not a strategy
game. That's totally a strategy game. Oh, well.
Okay. No, it's not on here.
That would maybe be the guess.
It was a sequel to... This is a sequel to a game that was totally out of nowhere when it was first announced and launched in like in the mid-2000s.
Uh-huh.
You know a lot about the making of the first game.
I don't know. Give me better clues. I'm still not there.
It takes a franchise
Halo
that was
Wars?
Not known.
Halo Wars 2?
Yes.
Oh my god. Okay. Halo Wars 2.
And then the fifth entry is an indie game. I don't think you'll get this, but it's a real-time strategy game that was I liked it actually. I thought it was a really interesting game. Independent game.
Give me like not facts about it, but give me like clues about the name or something. Something easier.
The name has alliteration in it.
Okay.
Three words.
Uh-huh. I feel like we're playing charades right now.
Yeah, right. okay, it's the goal of this game is to be like a simplified real-time strategy game. So it's like an RTS like StarCraft, except you only control one character and you're running around a map. You play as anthropomorphic.
There you go.
Anthropomorphic animals. It's by the maker of Monaco.
Oh, that game. Yeah, what's that game called? It's like
Tooth and Tail.
Tooth and Tail. Yeah, no way. Never would have gotten that. Okay, moving on.
Wow.
What's a punt? What are you guessing here? Best sports racing game. Okay.
It's so funny that sports and racing are just one category.
They're like,
together.
Well, they're like the two things that nobody really cares about.
Yeah, this one. Okay, so FIFA?
Yes.
2K? NBA 2K?
Yes.
Madden?
No.
No, Madden.
Yeah.
What is it? Forza Horizon? Is that the one that came out this year?
No.
Forza 7?
Yeah, Forza 7. There are six, by the way.
Oh, there are six.
Yeah, okay, because so it's because it's racing and sports, so they had to have an Got extra it. One.
GT whatever GT Sport.
Yeah, correct. I would so never remember that at all. Nice. Oh, that's Gran Turismo. Okay, never mind. I actually probably would have figured that out.
NHL something.
No.
Okay, what did I guess? Four already. Mm-hmm. UFC something.
No. What's another like major? What's the most popular sport in the world?
Oh, 2K, yeah. Oh, well, FIFA already did. Mm-hmm. FIFA's the most popular
There's
sport.
There's another one. What's the other sport? What's the other soccer?
The game? Other most popular sport?
No, the other video game about that sport.
Oh, PES?
Mm-hmm. That's five. Yeah, so that's one five. More.
Is it like a boxing thing?
No, it's a racing game, and it's named for the things that you race.
Cars?
Yeah.
Project Cars?
Yeah, Project Cars too. I will say that counts.
Wow, what a category.
Yeah, weird. Really weird. A bunch of soccer games and racing games. It's all the.
All right, let's get on to some more interesting ones.
All right, keep going.
All right, this one should be good. So you have to guess best RPG.
Okay. I'm trying to scroll to the top without looking at anything.
So this includes, I should tell you, this includes games that were released at the end of last year but didn't fit into the window because it's like mid November is what the closing point. So it counts games that came out after mid November of last year.
Anything to make this more confusing. Okay, Divinity Original Sin 2 is definitely one.
Yes.
But like Zelda doesn't count, so Zelda isn't there?
No Zelda. That's okay. Not an RPG.
Torment Tides of Numenera?
No.
Really? That came out this year, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't great.
Oh, I thought it was good. Okay. Man, I don't know. What else? Just, I don't know. What else came out? What? I need clues.
Come on. Really?
Is Nier a role-playing game? What's a role-playing game anymore?
All yeah, these Nier games, is.
Nier
yeah.
Is Nier a role-playing game? How is Nier a role-playing game and Zelda is not a role-playing
okay,
game?
Okay, but that's the point of this. Is
oh,
that
Persona 5.
Categories
okay,
are
Persona
stupid.
5 is going to be one.
Uh-huh.
Persona so 5 isn't three. Even a role-playing game. That's I don't know. This is a weird category.
so that's three.
Okay.
Genres in general make no sense.
Yeah, this is just revealing the difficulty of genres.
Okay, so of the two that are remaining, one of them just came out and should not be on this list.
Oh, Xenoblade 2?
No.
Oh. Wolfenstein?
But it just came out, I mean, like a month and a half ago.
Did Assassin's Creed have that? Assassin's Creed was just as much of a role-playing game as Nier Automata.
Not on here. It's 2D.
It's 2D, and it just came out a month ago, and it should not be on here.
It's definitely not one of the best RPGs of the year. It's an RPG.
Okay. But it's not one of the best of the year.
It's animated.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's come back to this. The other one of the two came out at the end of last year, so that's why I mentioned this.
Oh, okay. Great. So, like, something
it's
I can
one of the biggest RPGs.
December.
It's one of the biggest RPGs of the past couple of years. But even though it came out at the end of last year, it's been getting DLC all year and new content and updates and stuff like that that are just continuing.
Mm-hmm.
I also reviewed it.
You reviewed also reviewed it. Games. Oh, Final Fantasy 15?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, this is just, man, this is a lot harder than I thought it would be. Thinking of, I mean, Final Fantasy 15 is just not a game that is at all in my mind or in any kind of frame of reference that I would be having
right?
for thinking
it's so
about
strange, right?
an award show right now. So I just have no idea. I don't know. What's the last one? Just tell me.
South Park.
Oh, right. Jesus Christ. Like, so, I literally played that game for 5 minutes and haven't thought about it since then. And it's
that's
just
so
not
funny.
In my
the
mind.
Thing about these, yeah, and the thing about these categories is that it's clearly so. This is all based on this panel of judges who are game journalists from various outlets. But it's clear that they don't have the breadth to cover every single game because if they were actually covering the best RPGs of the year, it would include, like, Trails in the Sky, the third, or some of the other smaller, better stuff that has come out that is just better than South Park. So it feels like for some of these categories, they're just going with the defaults, which I think is inevitable with an award show like this. All right, so I'm going to guess best action game now.
Okay, let me pull it up.
Man, I have to think about what would be considered an action game. It's such a strange. The look on your face right
this
now.
Sucks.
I wish people could
oh
see
my
the
God.
Look on your
okay.
face.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Good luck. There are five.
This sucks. Okay. This sucks. What a good reaction. All right. Assassin's Creed Origins.
No.
Shadow of War.
No.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, you're in trouble. There's one game here that I would say is the best action game of the year, and
But what is an action game? What does action mean?
It means you do actions. You know, there are some video games you would be surprised to hear where you don't do any actions.
What is the more I think about it, the less this makes sense. What is an action game? What does that actually mean?
I mean, it means a game where you're predominantly in real time fighting things. So
fighting things?
I guess, yeah. I mean, that's basically how I would define each of these games, except one is a real weird pick. But yeah.
Oh God.
Okay, I'll give you some clues.
Yeah, start giving me some hints.
So one is a game. It came out only on PS4, and then it came out on PC recently. And I've talked about it a lot as one of the best action games of the year.
Mm-hmm. Came out only on PS4.
And yeah, PC earlier in the year it was on PS4, and then it just recently came out on PC.
Destiny 2.
No, that's actually on here though. So good job.
What? That's an action game.
Sure. I guess it's an action game. Yeah. No, this one is a melee combat focused. Inspired by a very popular series.
Neo?
Yes, that's two.
Okay. Oh, okay. I can see that. Yeah. But how is Destiny 2 in the same category as Neo?
Right.
That's so strange. Okay.
Okay.
Three others?
Yeah.
Three more? Okay.
One, I mean, I don't even know. One was on the indie game list. And it,
Pyre?
No. And
Cuphead?
Yeah, Cuphead is one. Okay. So that's three.
Sure. Cuphead, Destiny, Neo, yeah, all action, definitely.
One is probably pretty clearly an action game, I guess. It's it came out at the end of October, and it's a shooter.
Wolfenstein?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the last one is ridiculous, and you're never gonna guess it.
Okay, give me some hints.
It came out early in the year. I'm trying to think of things that won't
Resident Evil 7?
No. Though that would be probably a better pick than this. It's not really an action game. It's a more of an immersive sim. That probably gives it away.
This?
Yeah.
What immersive? Prey?
Yeah, Prey. Prey is
what?
The fifth.
I don't know. So wait a minute. Wait a minute. It's Prey, Wolfenstein 2, Destiny 2.
Cuphead.
Neo and Neo. Cuphead?
Yeah, those are the five games.
That is ridiculous. That is the dumbest.
That's a tough one.
Category.
That's a tough one.
Okay. Well, let's keep moving.
Yeah.
All right. You have to guess the best action adventure game.
It was just the same. So this is just an action game with a little more adventure. All right. I'm just going to start guessing shit. So wait, why isn't Prey on this one? I feel like Prey has more action adventure, which implies a little less just direct action and a little more story, I guess. Is that okay? So
I will say that looking at all five of these games, they're all like either open world games or games where you go visit a lot of places. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's the adventure part.
Yeah, Horizon Zero Dawn, right, has to be one. Assassin's Creed has to be one. Shadow of War, maybe?
Nope.
No, that didn't get any nominations. Harsh. Nier Automata?
Nope.
What?
That was an RPG, remember?
Right, it's a role-playing game because you do so much role-playing in Nier Automata. Yakuza 0?
No.
No, that was kind of a stretch. I didn't think they were really going to nominate that.
Think about some of the games of the year.
Oh, yeah, duh. Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an action-adventure game. And then also game of the year. Okay, whatever.
So baffling, right?
Yeah, very baffling. What are the other big ones? We already did Assassin's Creed, and Wolfenstein, I guess, wasn't an action-adventure game, and Destiny 2 is an action game and not an action-adventure game, so that's not on there. What were the other big October games?
So, okay, so two more games. One of them is a big October game.
Okay.
It's a clear game of the year. This game is going to win awards all over the place. It's
Mario
one of the top
Odyssey?
Games. Yeah.
Really? That's an action-adventure game?
According to
what
the game.
However, okay, Mario Odyssey.
And then the fifth one is it was sold for $40.
But it's not Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. Oh, no. Uncharted: Lost Legacy.
Yes.
That was a good hint. That one helped.
Okay. So what's next? Best art direction.
Now we're getting into categories we can actually guess. I'm glad we've gotten away from best random designation game and into things like best art direction and best music. I think these will be a little easier to guess.
Okay.
All right,
so
we're doing art direction. Let me pull it up. Give me a second here. Oh, there it is. Art direction. Okay, here we go.
Okay. Super Mario Odyssey.
No.
What?
I don't know.
That's crazy.
No.
Cuphead.
Yeah, these are actually pretty easy, though. I think you're going to get these all. There are five. Yeah, Cuphead is one.
Zelda.
Yes.
Horizon.
Yes.
Assassin's Creed.
No, surprisingly.
Huh.
That should have been on here.
So, Cuphead, Zelda, Horizon. Give me some hints, just so I'm not guessing.
Okay, one is a game that obviously you and I both have talked a lot about and written a lot, and that has
Destiny.
Yeah, unbelievable skyboxes, Destiny. And the other one, I'm actually surprised you didn't guess it, but I think you're maybe just thinking of it as an outlier. But this game has absolutely sensational art. It came out earlier in the year. We've talked about it quite a bit, and it's all illustrated. It's all animated and illustrated and hand done. And very colorful and lots of beautiful colors and art.
I went, I guess it's just slipping my mind. Give me another hint.
I mean, if I gave you almost any other hint, it would give it away because it's so obvious and you know it so well. But it is Japanese.
Persona. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Persona 5 is the fifth
okay.
one. That's
all
a,
right.
That's a good, so, that's solid lineup of art direction.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm surprised. I feel like Mario should be
maybe
out
it's a punishment for those terrible boss character designs in Mario.
I would actually say that, yeah, that's true. But Mario, I mean, the worlds in Mario are incredible.
Yeah, no, but, I mean, I would say that game deserves to have an art direction nomination for sure.
Now it's time for you to guess the games that have the best score or music. This one's all for you.
Okay, we're
there
get
are
this.
Six of these.
I'm
six of
get
these.
This. Okay, so obviously Persona is that one
yes.
of them. Okay, Persona, Zelda.
Yes.
Good. Cuphead.
Yes.
Cool. Night in the Woods.
No.
Okay, that seemed like kind of like an outside shot.
This is all like big
all
games
big stuff.
That we've mentioned already.
Destiny 2, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah, and Mario and Rabbids.
Two more. What'd you say? Mario and Rabbids?
No, that's too bad. No. Grant Kirkhope. He did good music for that. Mario Odyssey?
Yes.
Okay. And Nier
One more.
Nier Automata.
Yes.
Gotta be.
Yes.
Okay.
Wow, you just nailed it.
That
those.
Was an easy one.
Okay. Best narrative.
That's tricky. Best narrative. I feel like the best narrative is the narrative of Mario Odyssey. A guy showed up, he jumped on a bunch of ugly rabbits, picked up some moons, he got a hat. It's a good narrative.
Saved his girlfriend.
Gets the story done.
All right. Best narrative. Do you have them open?
No, let me find it. Sorry, I'm never prepared on these. There's so many categories. There's a lot of categories that we're skipping, by the way. I don't think we're doing games for impact or a couple other ones. All right, here we go. Best narrative.
Yeah, we skipped a bunch of these. Best narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So, Persona?
No.
What?
That last act got him, I think. No, I don't know. Or nobody, the judges finished the game.
Who yeah, knows? Nobody finished it. Nier?
Yes, Nier is one. There are five, by the way.
Zelda?
No.
Wolfenstein?
Yes.
Prey?
No.
Resident Evil?
Nope.
Really? Wow. Yeah. Pyre?
No. That's a questionable one. I feel like that game has a really cool story.
Night in the Woods?
No.
Wow.
These are good guesses. All of those would have been worthy nominations.
Horizon?
Yes.
Yeah, that game had a pretty sweet story. Final Fantasy 15, is that on there?
No. So the last two are a little tricky. They're both kind of mid-tier. They're both very narrative-focused.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you played either
Hellblade?
Of them. Yes, Hellblade is one. And the other one...
Yeah, a lot of games just winning nominations for a lot of the same games across all the nominations.
Yeah.
What's
yeah,
the other one?
The other one is it's a narrative-only game. There are other mechanics in it, but it's just a story-focused game. That came out this year.
That could be a lot of things.
It was a nominee for one of the categories that I had to guess as well.
Night in the Woods.
No, and I didn't know it. And then I think, I don't remember how I got it. I figured, oh, you told me that I liked it. And then I remembered. And because you thought I reviewed it, but Gita actually reviewed it. Though she and I talked about it. It's named for a woman. It's a woman's name.
Oh, what's it called? Man, what was that freaking game?
So What Remains of Edith Finch.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Tom would be happy. Didn't he help write that game?
Did he? Yeah. I think maybe
he did. Yeah, Tom
Bissell.
All right. So next up, Best Game Direction. And this is awarded to a game studio for outstanding creative vision and innovation in game direction and design. It's not really clear how this is different than Game of the Year.
Yeah.
But
it's interesting because it's awarded to a studio and not awarded to a director.
No, but it's based on games are the categories, not studio.
Right, but I mean, like, it doesn't, it's not, the directors aren't the ones nominated. The games are nominated. Is the director listed in the nomination?
No.
In what you're looking at? So there's no game director.
It just says the games and the studios.
Yeah, it's an odd name only because it, I think because it shares a name with the Best Director Award. That's a little bit weird.
Right.
I'm going to make a few informed guesses
here. Yeah, just guess like Game of the Year.
Yeah, I'm going to say Zelda is one. Nier has got to be one, right?
Nope.
Really? That's weird because Yoko Taro is actually a sort of a visionary director that I, you know.
But game direction doesn't really mean anything.
Okay, so Horizon Zero Dawn?
Yeah.
Okay. How many are there?
5.
Mario Odyssey?
Yeah. So those are the 3 Game of the Year contenders. And then 2 more. One of them is a good game. Came out in October.
Wolfenstein?
Yeah. And then the 5th one came out way early. 5th one is kind of out of nowhere. Came out way earlier this year.
Huh. Not Resident Evil?
Yes, Resident Evil.
Really? Okay. I could see that, actually. That and Wolfenstein both have... direction is such a weird thing. I think if it means what I think it means, it makes sense to me. But I don't know if it means what I think it means. But anyway.
Well, if it means, like, cinematic direction, then why would Zelda and Mario win?
Well, and kind of a little more than just that. Like, visual presentation and visual ideas. I don't know. Yeah, but that's not really what games do, and that's not what game directors do. That's a weird one. Weird category.
All of these categories are so silly. All right. I'm up for best ongoing game.
That is a category that I really like. Best game as a service. This is a new one. This feels like a smart one to add. Okay, best ongoing game. We have only a couple of these left, right? Yeah, we have 2 more after this. Okay, I am looking now. Best ongoing game. Oh, this is interesting.
Destiny 2.
What did you guess?
Destiny.
Okay, yeah, that's one. There's 6.
Overwatch.
Yes.
Dota.
No, actually.
League of Legends.
No.
PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
No. Oh, yes. Sorry. That, I was like, no? Yes. That's yes. 3.
So that's 3.
Mm-hmm.
Rocket League.
No.
What? How are...
They're kind of bigger than that. Games that sort of have more persistent systems, maybe. I don't know.
So how many of these games came out this year? And how of the 3 remaining?
Of the 3 remaining, none of them came out this year.
Oh, so this is all older stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm.
What are the 3? There's one that you might not get, but they're a little tricky. I'll have to give hints, maybe. What? There's one that you should get. That's one of the biggest online games. We write about it all the time. We have a dedicated freelancer who covers it.
Ark Survival Evolved.
No, that's not it. But
EVE Online.
Nope.
GTA Online.
Yeah, GTA Online.
Okay.
And the other two, okay, let's see. One of these is a competitive tactical game that started out bad and then became good. And now people really, really like it.
Tactical game. What do you mean by tactical?
Like a tactics first-person shooter. Like
Rainbow Six
Siege. Rainbow Six Siege. And the last one is a game that a lot of people say is like Destiny, only it has way more good stuff in it, which I'm skeptical
Warframe?
Of. Yeah, but people say that. Yeah, Warframe. That was
interesting.
All of them.
Cool. That's a cool category. I like that. Although it's weird that something like Dota or League of Legends wouldn't be on there.
And weird, I don't know how they figure it out because those games are so popular, but is it just by popularity or by what they're doing? I guess it's just judges are sort of picking. So it's whatever the
great
people
question.
Are playing. And there is that ongoing issue where the games media kind of doesn't play League of Legends or Dota. I mean, some people do, but it's way more likely that they're going to be playing GTA Online or Warframe or something.
Right.
Like
yeah.
So I guess that's maybe
all right.
Part of it.
Are you ready for the best category?
I sure am.
Most anticipated game presented by McCafe.
That's McCafe, right? Is that the, or is it, is McCafe?
No, McCafe, McDonald's Cafe.
Oh. I thought it was, I read this and thought it was McCafe, like the virus scanning software.
No,
so,
this is actually McCafe.
So I need a point of clarification. Is this the most anticipated game or is this the most anticipated game that will be presented by McCafe? am I restricted at picking among games that are presented?
You're presented to only McDonald's coffee based
right.
games.
Right. Only
no, so
those.
It's so funny that this is actually the award, by the way. If anyone goes to the website and you look at the nominees, it's all these different nominations and then mm-hmm. most anticipated game presented by McCafe. It's so funny. And also it's so funny that this is the one that is presented by a sponsor because most anticipated game is just rewarding marketing, like it's not rewarding
right.
anything.
So of course, this is, it makes sense. It's on brand.
Yes. So this is always the category we shit on the most for good reason because it's the dumbest category and this should not be here. But you still have to guess them. So there are 5 games here.
All right. 5 games.
So look
Spider-Man
ahead.
Has got to be
yes.
one. Red Dead Redemption 2. This is terrible. Now, though, I don't know. What, Shenmue?
No. Okay, so one of these is really, really obvious.
Mm-hmm. Metroid Prime?
No, it's a sequel to... Actually, Metroid should be on here. I'm surprised it's not. Yeah. But this one is... It's a sequel to...
Oh, The Last
one
of
One of the
Us.
Greatest games.
The Last of Us Part 2.
Yes.
Okay. Sure. I'm just going down the list of what
this
the
next
big...
one... All right, you want to guess a couple more?
No. Please give me hints.
This next one is... kind of like The Last of Us. It's very inspired by
Oh,
The Last
Days
of
Gone.
Us.
That would have been...
No.
No? Oh. And there's not another Uncharted. Wait, what's another game that's a lot like The Last of Us?
It's inspired by The Last of Us. It's very much like, look, I am a dad going around with my kid.
Uh-huh. Oh, God of War?
Yes.
Weak. Really? That's one of the most anticipated games?
Yeah, crazy, right?
Yeah, I guess.
And then the fifth one... you're not going to get. It's. I'm surprised it's on here. It's a Japanese game that you and I are probably going to check out. It's a game in a series that... No, it's a game in a series that we don't know a lot about and haven't spent a ton of time playing. But a lot of people love this series. People are obsessed with this series.
Huh.
In Japan, it's like the biggest thing ever.
Yokai Watch?
Nope.
Pokemon?
Nope.
Isn't Pokemon the biggest thing ever in Japan?
Sure.
It's not Final Fantasy?
Nope.
What's, I don't know.
You're close. You're getting close.
Yeah? Is it a JRPG series?
Sort of. It's like an action JRPG.
Huh. And there have been, they've been, is it not, and it's not a Valkyria Chronicles? That's not an action game.
No.
I don't know.
It's by Capcom.
Okay. Not Dead Rising, not... What else does Capcom make? Not Street Fighter, not...
Don't Google it. No Google.
No, I'm not doing it. My hands are... Look, you can see my hands. I'm not doing it.
Okay, I can
Googling.
See your hands.
What does it rhyme with?
It rhymes with Flonster Flunter.
Monster Hunter World. Oh, that's a good pick, actually. I'm anticipating that game. It's a good pick for this terrible award category that I think shouldn't exist.
Sure.
That's a good one. Yeah. That is probably my most anticipated game. If we're getting into that, I'm looking forward to playing that. Isn't the beta in like 2 days or something? Yeah, it is. It's on the 9th.
Okay, I guess we're up to the last category that we're doing.
Yeah.
Which is, the game of the year. So I feel like this is going to be easy.
I think this is probably the easiest one, yes.
Five?
Yeah, there are five.
Mario.
Yep.
Zelda.
Yep.
Horizon.
Yep.
PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Yep.
Nier Automata.
No. The fifth one is a little surprising.
It's not Nier?
No.
It's surprising.
I can give you a clue.
Wolfenstein?
No, it's... A pick that would make you very happy.
That would make me very happy?
Mm-hmm.
Is it one of my, games? Persona?
Yeah, Persona 5 is the fifth nominee for Game of the Year. A little bit of a surprising choice there, I think.
Yeah, I'm very surprised that Nier isn't on there instead of Persona.
Same. There you have them.
But yeah, that's a solid list of Game of the Years. I guess it's safe to say that all five of those will be on our Game of the Year list.
Good games, sure.
Yeah. That's a solid list. I mean, our Game of the Year list is going to be 12 games, and I'm sure that a lot of the ones we've mentioned in these nominees will be on there. And I think what they're trying to do with all these categories is just make sure everyone gets a bone, and we're not going to see like Zelda take every award because
I wonder. I wonder if there's any real control there. I mean, I guess it comes down to this collective bias by all the voters who maybe each voter tried to do that, and as a result, there's sort of a collective sense of we're giving everybody something. But I think, as Jeff said, I don't think there's any presiding committee that just decides, okay, well, now we're going to do it this way. I really think it's just by vote.
It's just voters. Yeah, 100%. Before we go on to our next segment, do you think that Zelda is a lock, or do you think that Battlegrounds or Mario have a shot?
I like that this is the part one of a two-part question, and the second part is, do you want to put any money on it?
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Well, if you were coming to Vegas with me, then we could do that.
And you know there's some gambling going on the Game Awards. I don't know. It's a really good game. I think for this kind of awards show where they like to give, you know, it's a very Game of the Year-y game, if that makes any sense. So, sure. Uh-huh. I don't know about lock. Nothing's a lock. I don't call things a lock since November 2016. But
that's fair.
I would say it's a pretty strong favorite, sure.
Yeah, I feel strongly enough that whoever is writing the Kotaku post about the winners, I will tell them to pre-write it as Zelda takes win in the Game of the Year.
You could publish it with a fake in-progress headline that says something like, Zelda takes Game of the Year, and then in parentheses, make sure, check, do not publish
do until not publish. After. Gawker did something like that.
Yeah, I remember. That's what I'm thinking of.
All right, so that was fun. So let's take another quick break, and then we'll be back to talk about some video games.
Cool.
Okay, Kirk, it's been a long show, but before we say goodbye for the week, I want to talk about some video games.
Yeah.
Why don't we start with Skyrim Switch, because we were talking about that a little bit last week, and I told you that I was strongly considering buying it. Uh-huh. Well,
what happened after that, Jason?
On Friday, I spent $65 on Skyrim Switch, $60 plus tax, and downloaded it onto my Switch and spent the weekend playing it, and it is fantastic. I'm so happy I did this. I think that the portability of the Switch, and I know this is cliche, but it really does change everything. Being able to play these like console games, essentially, while you are using the TV and watching sports, or while your significant other is using the TV, it just changes everything. It really does. And Skyrim is still great. Still a great video game.
I also bought Skyrim. I only paid $60 because we don't have sales tax in Oregon. And you convinced me too. I mean, this really started with me saying I was thinking about buying it, and then you talking me out of it, and then you buying it. I think there's a very twisted web leading up to us both buying Skyrim on Switch. I had bought it as well, and I've been playing it as well.
It's so funny that I talked you out of it, and then I talked you into it.
You talked you out of it, then you talked yourself into it, then I decided, well, if he's going to buy it, I'm going to buy it, especially if he says it's good. And it's great. No, I agree with everything you're saying. It's very, very good. And mm-hmm. It's really a great port for starters. I think that's just impressive. Yes. It's technically very, very good. It runs at a real smooth frame rate. I'm used to playing that game on PC, and it looks, I guess, better, and it runs at 60 frames per second, but I really don't miss it in this game. It's such a kind of clunky game anyway.
That's the thing.
I don't really care. The motion aiming is actually good. It's another game that benefits when mm-hmm. you aim your bow. You can kind of move the Switch to line up your shot. And it has been long enough, I think. I think it's just been long enough. I think I really was playing Skyrim a lot in 2011 into 2012, and then never really played it again since then. And I played, I think, almost 200 hours of it or something, but it was on one character, and I did a lot of stuff, but I didn't play all the DLC. I didn't play. There was mm-hmm. plenty of stuff I didn't do. And doing it again, I mean, it already feels like, I don't know, I was near that first town that you go to, mm-hmm. and I found this lady in a house sort of waiting outside the town, and she seemed a little weird, and I talked to her, and then I went into her house, and I looked in the basement, and I picked the lock to go in there, and she had a book there about how she was going to start a coven of witches when her sister got there, and then I came mm-hmm. out, and she attacked me, and I killed her, and it was cool, and I didn't remember that at all. There's so much stuff like that in that game that even though I've played 200 hours, I either don't remember it, or I didn't see it, and it really feels different. It's remarkable how different it feels just uh-huh. playing it on a hand.
Yeah, and it really changes some things. Like, for example, reading the books, it makes such a huge difference when you can literally hold it up as like if you're reading a book. And that makes it so much more enjoyable than having to squint at a TV screen or a computer monitor and be like, all right, I'm going to stand here reading the book.
It makes the repetitive stuff in the game also just doesn't seem like as big of a deal because I don't really care. Like you said, I'll be sitting on the couch, Emily is watching TV, and I'll be playing it. And I'm just sort of cruising through a dungeon or whatever. And there are so many repetitive dungeons in that game, but it's...
Right, so many jogger.
It just isn't as annoying as when I'm, you know, in the full gamer position with a big screen in front of me doing a, you know, repetitive dungeon. That feels a little more like, ugh, I should be doing something else. When it's on a handheld, I'm like, whatever, I don't
care. Right, it's easier to get away with tedium, yeah. Except for Xenoblade 2. But But yeah, and then the other thing is, I was thinking, you just telling me that story reminded me of one time where we went out to dinner with a group of game developers. I think it was right after Skyrim had come out, like 2012 or something like that. Mm-hmm. In Seattle, we were at dinner with a bunch of game developers, and the conversation turned to Skyrim, and we all just went around the table telling Skyrim stories. Yeah. And I remember enjoying that so much. It just felt like this is such a special video game where you just have all these stories of hilarious glitches or like fun things you discovered that you feel like only you have discovered, and then you Google it, and of course other people have found it, but it still feels like you right. got to like get that feeling of you poked good, in yeah. the right place.
It's a good bookend it's funny that I think I saw somewhere people talking about Xenoblade 2 as a good bookend to Breath of the Wild in the Switch's incredible first year, but really I think that Skyrim is a much more fitting and appropriate bookend to Breath of the yes. Wild, which Breath of the Wild clearly drew inspiration from Skyrim and then took it in new directions and is a much, you know, in some ways more exciting and like a next level game from Skyrim, but still Skyrim is still really good, and they both have that quality, that sort of mm-hmm. simulation in an open world mixed with just sort of the natural beauty of a world that's really nice to just explore. Skyrim still looks really nice. I mean, I know the characters look cheesy, but there are lots of times where I'm still struck by how pretty that game is. That 6-year-old game. So I've really been liking it.
Yes, just a phenomenal video game and runs really well on the Switch. The other thing that you and I have both been jumping into is Destiny 2 Curse of Osiris, which we should talk a little bit about, because Destiny 2 is in a very bad place right now. I think it's safe to say.
It's in a weird place right now. There's a lot of bad, and you wrote a review, or you wrote an impressions of the campaign, which I also finished. Maybe we won't spoil anything, but it's not super exciting. Like you said, the boss is cool looking and is built up. Actually, the boss is built up in a way that really reminded me of Destiny 1, where there's just a part where a character says the boss's name, and it's this big robot. And it's like you're supposed to know who it is, but you don't. And there just isn't really... There's nothing like in the original Destiny 2 where they established the villain and then they gave you cutscenes with the villain and you learn who the villain is and learn something about him. It's very storytelling 101. It's not like it was the most exciting thing in the world in Destiny 2, but at least it was there and you knew who Gaul was by the end. In this, it's just very much, oh, that's the boss. That's a boss. And there's the boss and you're going to fight the boss and then you fight the boss.
It did feel like a regression. Yeah, and it also, they set him up as this earth-shattering villain to the point where Osiris was so alarmed that he felt the need to discard his ghost and jump in without her and just go crazy. But no, it's just a fucking robot. Like, they never explained why this robot was so capable of cataclysmic destruction.
Right. So there were some things about the story that I really liked. I think I would have liked them more if I hadn't watched the streams that we watched. We had to watch them to cover them, but there were times where they showed the sort of split timelines and stuff that there's some stuff they do in the story that I think is really cool. And if I had just gone in cold, I think I would have been much more... I would have come away saying, wow, that was neat. I really like some of the ideas. I like the idea of a person, in this case Osiris, making multiple copies of himself throughout timelines that all interact with one another and then come back and report back to him, and you keep seeing them in different... Like, that's cool. I like what's-her-name from Firefly. Is it like Morika Baccarin, I think is her name, who plays the ghost. I think she's good.
Yep.
So there's good bones there, and there's some amazing visuals. It's really nice looking. It's just, you know, I already knew about some of the reveals that happen, and so that robbed them of a little bit of their impact. And
that's fair.
And a story like in a game like this kind of story is just never going to be that awesome. I mean, the Gaul, there were a couple cool things in that story, in the Destiny 2 main story, but even then, you know, by the end, you just kind of whip Gaul's ass, and then the real game begins, which is sort of similar here. Like, I don't think anyone's going to be playing through this stuff again or really talking too much about the story of Curse of Osiris. I feel like people have already stopped talking about it.
Sure, but yeah, I mean, but that's what that's like the bulk of this expansion pack. So that's what a lot of people, I mean, there are different types of Destiny players, and some people are just doing it for the story missions. Some other people are doing it long term. The thing that I think bugged me the most is that Osiris has been set up over these years, and he was originally supposed to be he was originally created by Joe Staten and team for their original vision of Destiny 1 story, until the summer reboot of 2013, which we've detailed extensively. And then Osiris as a character was kind of scrapped, and they've mentioned him and hinted at him with Trials of Osiris and a couple of other things over the years. And he was built up as this great presence, this space wizard that is this just incredible incredible character. And then we see him and he's just like a gruff dude who wears a bandana and is like mean to Ikora. It was just very disappointing to actually see him in action. I felt like we didn't get the grand wizard, the Dumbledore quality, like the Gandalf.
It's funny because I feel like this is a thing that Destiny is going to continue to run into the more they work with their existing lore, is that it's sort of the never meet your heroes thing.
Or right, just they set up this, you know, there was this vision that they couldn't live up to.
And there was this conflict between the idea of, you know, not like just not showing things to people and having very vague references and allusions to grand events that you weren't a part of, the sort of Dark Souls style of storytelling. And then, there, you know, the conflict between that and let's just have cutscenes where the characters all talk and everything is out in the open. And Destiny 2 has definitely moved much more in the direction of let's just have cutscenes where the characters all talk. The problem with that is then you show people, like you said, Osiris has always been this vague figure that's only really interesting if you get to know him. I think about Shin Malfur, Dredgen Yor. Like, I liked that story, the story of The Last Word versus Thorn and of this quest for vengeance, this sort of Wild West sci-fi thing that was really cool because it was told in snippets and you don't get the whole story and you kind of get it by the end and you imagine a lot of it. But if we actually meet Shin Malfur or something, or Dredgen Yor turns up in one of the expansions, you know he's just going to be some mook standing there, like, you know, telling you what to do and being a vendor and like giving you guns and stuff. And he's just not going to be cool. Like the same way that Osiris doesn't actually seem that cool. When he gets a cool cutscene and then you're kind of, you know, a lot of people talk about how cool he is, but you don't really get to see him. This actually makes me think of, there's this really cool video essay somewhere. It's about Quentin Tarantino and Cool. If you are interested in this and you're listening, just go Google that. I can't remember who did it, but it was about how Quentin Tarantino is very good at the idea of cool. Mm-hmm. And the way that he does cool is he sets people up. He spends a lot of times in his movies setting people up. If you think about Pulp Fiction, in Pulp Fiction, I know this is a digression, but whatever, it's a podcast. In Pulp Fiction, you know, they talk about Marcellus Wallace.
But whatever, I know this is a digression, but whatever, it's a podcast.
It's a podcast.
That should be your motto.
We're here, we're just talking. So, you know, they set up Marcellus Wallace. This whole time, you get all these conversations about Marcellus Wallace. Mm-hmm, and like, you learn all the stuff about him. He's the biggest badass. You're so scared of him. Everyone's talking about him all the time. And so that's really setting him up. And then when you finally meet him, the thing that Quentin Tarantino really likes to do is, in that movie, remember the first time you meet him is he's crossing the street with groceries and he's in front of Bruce Willis's car and they kind of make eye contact for a second and then Bruce Willis just hits him with his car and then they both get knocked out and they wake up and they're tied up by these guys and they go through this whole thing.
Wait, I thought the first time you met Marcellus Wallace, it was like the back of his, you just see the back of his
head. Right. You barely see him. He says like one line. But when you really first see his face and you see who he really is, he's actually immediately humanized and sort of humbled and the whole thing falls apart. And so he does that. He likes to do that a lot. And so that's, he's playing with that whole thing, introducing people and then reducing them in a lot of really advanced, cool ways. Destiny 2 is nowhere close to operating on that level, right? Maybe it's not a fair comparison. Actually, it's definitely not a fair comparison, but it's that same problem.
No, because
if you build
in
people
Destiny
up,
2, they have to give you tasks.
Right. And then what are they going to be? They're going to be quest givers. They're never going to be the thing that you hoped they would be. Even getting to know the Vanguard people in Destiny 2 was kind of disappointing. You know, they're not really that cool. They do some stuff and then they go stand around in the tower forever waiting for you to do things.
Yeah, I guess that's by a video game's nature. It has to do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think the best video game stories have strong villains. And I think that with Curse of Osiris, that's what it was really lacking. It had this villain that was, you were told that this villain is big and menacing and evil and going to destroy, end the world as we know it, but we never actually see that.
Right, and it's interesting because they do show you the dark future. They show you what was
going to come to
pass.
Which was awesome. That was the coolest part.
But it's not, for some reason, it doesn't connect. It doesn't quite work.
And he just looks like a fucking robot who's in the simulation. Right. And a lot of it is never quite explained.
It's nice at least that he's, the boss is not. All right, wait, hold on. Hold the phone. All right, this is Kirk as I'm editing this show. And Jason just said something that I talked over and I need you to hear it. And this is what he said.
A lot of it is never quite explained. I guess they didn't have time to explain.
Okay, I just want everyone to appreciate, for the record, that Jason made that joke that happened.
I guess they didn't have time to explain. I guess they didn't have time to explain. Time to explain. Time to explain.
Time to explain.
I thought the boss fight is cool, even though it's not hard. You just kind of go through three phases and then beat it. It was yeah. interestingly
it's
designed.
Cool. It's fun.
Yeah, neat looking. And the boss, Raid I style. At least appreciated that he wasn't just a big Vex Minotaur or whatever. Like,
right.
Like
he got a cool, a unique huge design. Step
up. So let's actually pivot to slightly larger discussion of Destiny 2, because
yeah.
One comparison that I see made a lot, and that I made earlier in the show even, is between Destiny 1 at this point and Destiny 2 at this point. And mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the anger over Destiny 2, it can be traced to a lot of different things, but one of the big the complaints that I see over and over again is Destiny 1, by the end of the third year, had so much stuff in it. It was so thick with just content and systems and things you could do and things you could chase and like endless
and quality engagement. Of life improvements.
Yeah, and they'd done a couple really big quality of life improvement runs. And so by that time, it was this really big game. Destiny 2 feels like, oh, they undid so much of that, and we've kind of gone back to this base state that they're then going to build on. So I think when people look at it, I think that's accurate. When you look at Destiny 2, it does feel as though they went back to a foundation and they're going to build on it again. And in a year or two, Destiny 2 will probably be, well, hopefully, I don't know, actually, probably. Hopefully it will be a much bigger, much better, much more fleshed out game, thick with the same kinds of systems and stuff. I think people were expecting...
Until Destiny 3.
Exactly. And so I think that... I don't know how clearly this has been articulated by everybody. I do think that what you just said is at the heart of a lot of this. Is that now... The difference between now and then... Well, there are a couple of differences. There's no denying that Destiny 2 is a far, far, far stronger game than Destiny 1 was at launch. They're not in the same league. Destiny 2 is so much better across the board in so many different ways. But there's this crucial difference, and that's that we've done this before. We did this over 3 years, and now that we're doing it again is not the same as doing it for the first time. And doing it again knowing that Destiny 3 is going to come out and we're going to have to do uh-huh. it yet again is even more exhausting. And suddenly it feels like the weight of the deal that Bungie signed with Activision, the weight of that however many sequels and expansions deal, is finally really hitting people, I think. That, oh, mm-hmm. this isn't just going to be a game like Overwatch that we play forever. This is going to have individualized sequels, and it's going to be like this again. We're going to have to do this yet again. It's going to constantly reset. And I think that alone is a real bummer. And I think that bums people out.
Man. Yeah. The cycle just never ends.
It does. Which is too bad. Cause I really like the game. I didn't get to tell this story, but I raided last night with this group of guys who were amazing, and we went through the raid, the Leviathan raid, in a way that I've never done before. Going through all the back areas between encounters and getting every chest, we beat the whole thing in an hour. It was so fun. It was the most fun I've had with Destiny in forever, and it reminded me how fun that game is. Play with your friends. It's just mm-hmm. the meta stuff, the stuff outside of the game, that feeling of the overarching narrative of the game and the expansions and the way Bungie keeps tripping over itself in these little but annoying ways. It really takes a toll on just the game overall.
So the problem that you and I have, and I wonder how many other friend groups are having the same problem, is that you really want to play on PC, but yeah. I don't have a gaming PC yet. So I'm playing on PS4,
yep.
which is fragmenting us, because yep. now you and I are just not going to play Destiny 2 together unless you decide to move to PS4 for the next raid or whatever.
Yep.
But right now we are just not playing together. And that has changed my perspective on it, because I just don't care enough to keep playing. I just have so many other things to do. So I'm almost completely done with Destiny 2. I'm just not into it anymore.
I wonder too how much that's... I think that's probably hurt things more than they anticipated, or more than has been really shown, because I think that you're right. I think...
Well, I don't know. I haven't really seen other people talking about that. I feel like that's just an experience
I think
that
a
you
lot
and
of
I have.
Well, so I can say that our clan anyways is definitely... It's an issue where there are people who got excited and started playing on PC, but now there's this sense that it's not really clear who in the clan is playing on which system. And it's cool that the clan stuff carries over between platforms, but it's still this feeling of sort of, well, we don't have everybody. And I'm sure mm-hmm. we're not the only ones who've had this happen, where one person, I went and put in the time, but there's no denying that it does take time. You can level up kind of quickly, but you still have to play through the whole campaign again and get your gear again. And the longer you play on PS4, the more you're giving up to play on PC. I think that it is definitely an issue. It's a bummer for me mm-hmm. that because like the thing last night was a reminder that Destiny is a game you play with people. And if you don't play with people, it's just a very different game. It's much less interesting. It's much less fun.
Right. Exactly.
And
exactly.
Yeah, if anything that damages that, and definitely splitting systems and releasing PC late damages that, it damages the game overall.
All right, so we are running along. We have to wrap things up.
Yeah.
You're playing other games. We can talk about this.
Yeah, we're both, I'm sure, just cranking through games for Game of the Year, but that'll be
Next week, we should say, you and I will be here in person. You will be in New York at our studio. We are mentally preparing to sit down for 3 hours and crank out our annual
vocal
tradition.
Vocal warm-ups all week, just to keep my voice together.
To those of you who just started listening to Split Screen this year, you may not be aware of this, but every single year we have a tradition where instead of picking our games of the year, which aren't super interesting, we go through every game of the year and just talk about them all, which we will do again this year. So we will be compiling that list, sitting down. I don't know if we're going to record it all in one show or break them up. Probably break them up. That's probably for the best.
Yeah, maybe.
That is going to happen next year.
It'll happen next week.
See, I'm already misspeaking.
Yeah, we're already
mentally preparing for my losing my voice. And then we will also be tuning in next week for a Star Wars bonus episode.
Yeah, that'll be good. We're very excited to see that and then to talk about it. So
yeah, that'll be fun. So to those of you who enjoy Kotaku Split Screen off topic, then you will look forward to that. All right, Kirk, I will see you next week.
Okay, Jason, see you then.
Kotaku Split Screen is an official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Kirk Hamilton and me, Jason Schreier. Kirk edits and mixes the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. We're a part of the Fusion Podcast Network, where Mandana Mufidi is executive producer of audio. You can find us on popular podcast services like Panoply, NPR Now, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts, and we hope you leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at Kotaku.com/splitscreen or email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.